from deep inside your radio. Ladies and gentlemen, from Austin, Texas, where the NCAA men's basketball semi-quarterly final tournament is being held. But that's not why I'm here. That's not the reason at all for my presence in the state capital of Texas. More about that in a moment, or not. But it probably did not escape your notice this week that the United States Congress has now set a new precedent. They have officially subpoenaed as a witness a woman who's been in a persistent vegetative state, PVS, for the last 15 years. Congress has subpoenaed a brain dead witness. Now this falls into the category of people say this all the time. How are you guys supposed to make fun of what's going on? It's so weird. Well, you know the temptation really is to throw up your hands at this one. Congress, ladies and gentlemen, Congress subpoenas a brain dead witness. Now I'll leave 5 seconds for you to write your own punchline. Hey, that's very good. But, you know, if they're in any doubt, they can just paste Mark McGuire's testimony this week in there, and it'll work just fine. Hello, welcome to the show.
Met this girl and she was lost in a cross street. She was walking off 14th on a sunny day. I asked her nicely if she needed some assistance. She said, hey, I'm just trying to pass the time away. So we started talking and we slipped around the corner, headed downtown for a cafeole. I got to thinking that she wanted something stronger. She said, hey, I'm just trying to pass the time away. Time away. Love in a bubble, time away. I'm in trouble. You got the money, honey, make mine a double. I love my love in a bubble. John out McDougal, we were getting pretty hungry, so ordered pizza and the waiter was gay. Yeah. Poured out the vino and he asked if we were married. She said, I'm just trying to pass the time away. We sat for hours and we talked about the weather, about the government, the country, and the price that you pay. I said, hey, baby, do you want to hear some music? She said, hey, I'm just trying to pass the time away. Time away. Loving a bubble. Time away. I'm in trouble. You got the money, honey. Make mine a double. With some groovy Hammond organ, I said, dance with me, baby, what do you say? She popped the pit, she boogaloo, and she did the mashed potato singing. Hey, I'm just trying to pass the time away. 4 in the morning, we were getting pretty tired. She said, you know, I only live a block or two away. So I looked at her and I took her hand, we headed up on 7th, singing, hey, we're just trying to pass the time away. Time away.
Trekking here. be our traveling light. There's one thing that's right wherever I go. That's where I am. If it's east or west that I am bound, there's one thing I've found wherever I go. That's where I am. I just can't seem to stay in one place all that long. I'm always looking for the door. It's not that where I am is not where I belong, 'cause I got frequent flyer points to score. I might be busy changing my scenes, but I know what that means wherever I go. That's where I am. I may be off to some exotic distant land, sorting out my foibles, my toes in the sand. I join the foreign legion if they're taking in recruits. Pounding out my troubles, wearing out my boots. I take a boat or I take a tank, but I take this to the bank wherever I go.
Wherever I go,
that's where I am. Just an easygoing Joe, and in the crowd you'd hardly ever pick me out. I keep my profile low. I'm not tricky, I'm just fast. One thing that'll last wherever I go. That's where I am. Why do I think changing scenes is what I need? I hear a drummer drumming and I'm following his lead. When I get there, I look around to check what I can see. And one familiar figure strongly resembles me. Later on, or in my youth, it's always the truth wherever I go. That's where I am. That's where I am. That's where I am.
From Austin, Texas. The Austin of Texas. Yeah, almost the Athens of Texas. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Why in Austin? Well, Dateline Austin. An electrical problem may be to blame for the death Thursday of a stunt diving pig at the State of Texas Fair, Star of Texas Fair and Rodeo. The animal, known as Big Red, died after diving off a platform into a heated pool as part of Randall's High Diving Pig Show. The pigs have performed the stunts many times, but owner Virgil Randall said he has had trouble with the pool's electricity lately. Why wouldn't you come to Austin if you can see something like that? But that's not why I'm here. Ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Though U.S. President George W. Bush and Secretary of State Rice have been giving the impression that the insurgency situation in Iraq is improving, the American Defense Intelligence Agency, which monitors the situation daily, says it's getting worse. This according to the Press Trust of India. Never too far to go for. The insurgency in Iraq has grown in size and complexity over the past year. Attacks numbered approximately 25 per day a year ago. DIA Director Vice Admiral Lowell Jacoby told the Senate Armed Services Committee. Attacks on Election Day reached approximately 300. Since January 30th, the election, attacks have averaged 60 per day. In the first 2 weeks, dropped to 50 per day. The pattern of attacks remains the same as last year, he said. Approximately 80% of all attacks occur in Sunni-dominated central Iraq. Why, that's where all the people are, isn't it? Well, kind of. The vice admiral also pointed out that multiple public opinion polls, which we know are worth less than the paper they're written on, anywhere in the world, show favorable ratings for the United States in the Muslim world at all-time lows, his wording. A large majority of Jordanians oppose the war on terrorism, believe that Iraqis will be, quote, worse off in the long term, he said. In Pakistan, he noted, a majority of the population holds a favorable view of Osama bin Laden. Hey, that's our ally Pakistan. They're our friends. They're our supporters in the war. Where'd our friends go? More about Pakistan in a moment. More news from outside the bubble first. The head, this from the French news agency. They haven't yet renamed themselves the Freedom News Agency, but we'll see about that. The head of Britain's Foreign Intelligence Agency told Prime Minister Tony Blair that the case for war in Iraq, this is before the war, of course, was being, quote, fixed, unquote, by Washington to suit U.S. policy. This according to a new BBC documentary. Look out for a new war between Tony Blair and the BBC. Richard Dearlove of MI6, British equivalent of the CIA, briefed Blair and a group of his ministers on the United States' determination to launch the invasion 9 months before hostilities began 2 years ago. Why, just about today. Didn't send a card, sorry. After attending a briefing in Washington, he told the meeting that war was inevitable. This, according to London's Sunday Times, owned by Rupert Murdoch. You're welcome, sir. The facts and intelligence were being, quote, fixed around the policy by the Bush administration, Dearlove said. The documentary argues that Blair had signed up to follow Bush's plans for regime change in Iraq as early as April 2002. Meanwhile, news of the new Iraq from a British newspaper as well. U.S. intelligence and military police officers in Iraq are routinely freeing dangerous criminals in return for their promise to spy on insurgents. In one case where the Independent has seen documents, police rescued a doctor after a gun battle with his kidnappers, arrested two of the kidnapped gang who made full confessions, but the U.S. military police took over custody of the two men and let them go. The doctor had to flee to Egypt after being threatened by the gang. Police station where the men were held recorded they'd been handed over to an American military police lieutenant for a transfer to a detention camp. But an American military spokesman told the newspaper there was no record of the two prisoners in the camp's database. Says a senior Iraqi police officer, the Americans are allowing the breakdown of Iraqi society because they're only interested in fighting the insurgency. We're dealing with an epidemic of kidnapping, extortion, and violent crime. But even though we know the Americans monitor calls, which are often used in ransom negotiations, they will not pass on any criminal intelligence to us. They only want to use the information against insurgents. An Iraqi government source confirms criminal suspects are often released if they agree to inform on insurgents despite the dangers to ordinary Iraqis. The Iraqi middle class has been heavily targeted by kidnappers since the fall of Saddam Hussein. Doctors are a favorite target. See, that's how far they have to go, ladies and gentlemen, to get to truly modern state of society, because we know in an advanced country like this, lawyers should be the target. News from inside the bubble. In an effort to increase pressure on North Korea, the Bush administration told its Asian allies in briefings earlier this year that North Korea had exported nuclear material to Libya. That was a significant charge. The first allegation that North Korea was helping to create a new nuke state, but that is not what U.S. intelligence reported. North Korea, according to the intelligence, had supplied uranium hexafluoride, which can be enriched to weapons grade, to, here's that country again, Pakistan. It was Pakistan, a key U.S. ally with its own nuclear arsenal, that sold the material to Libya. The U.S. government had no evidence that North Korea even knew of that second transaction. Pakistan's role as both the buyer and the seller was concealed to cover up the part played by Washington's partner in the hunt for al-Qaeda, according to the officials discussing the issue, on condition of, let's say it together, anonymity. In addition, a North Korea-Pakistan transfer was old news. U.S. allies knew of such transfers for years. The Bush administration's approach intended to isolate North Korea instead left allies increasingly doubtful as they began to learn that the briefings omitted essential details about the transaction, this according to the Washington Post. Not like we've had problems with the credibility of our intelligence in the past. is it? There'll be more about Pakistan, though. That's the good news. But first, here's some really good news. You know that the missile defense tests have not been going all that well, ladies and gentlemen. Just little glitches, but enough to make the defense not defensive. Now the U.S. Missile Defense Agency will be more secretive about aspects of its national missile defense program as it resumes major flight testing. This according to its new director. As we proceed in the future, you'll see more of the program becoming classified. That's almost an oxymoron. You'll see more of it becoming classified, meaning you'll see less of it. That's according to Air Force Lieutenant General Henry A. Obering III. Obering says officials have an obligation to inform U.S. taxpayers about the investment in the multi-billion dollar system, but the agency seeks to avoid tipping off potential enemies about weaknesses in the system, you see. So I guess we'll be hearing more about its strengths. I'll be listening closely. Aspects that anyone can glean a vulnerability or defense... I'm going to try to read this sentence and see where the verbs are. Aspects that anyone can glean a vulnerability or a definite determination of capability of the system are something that we want to protect. Okay, you got to the verb. The system has not been tested against realistic decoy balloons that any potential enemy might be expected to deploy. That's according to the website of a senator critical of the program. Iraq needed fuel. Halliburton was ordered to get it there quick, so the Houston-based contractor charged the Pentagon $27.5 million to ship $82,000 worth of cooking and heating fuel. This latest revelation about the company's oft-criticized performance in Iraq, a Pentagon audit disclosed this week showing Halliburton's subsidiary KBR spent $82,000 to buy liquefied petroleum gas in Kuwait and then 335 times that amount of money to transport the fuel into neighboring Iraq. Could have bought mules on the street cheaper. Pentagon auditors combing through the company's books were mystified by the charge. Quote, quoting the Pentagon auditing report, "It is illogical that it would cost $27 million to deliver $82,000 in fuel." Welcome to the modern world. Where, you know, logic, ladies and gentlemen, logic is a precious little commodity, don't you find? Dateline Las Vegas, Nevada elected officials called Thursday for the Justice Department to investigate revelations that data supporting the proposed nuclear waste dump in Yucca Mountain, Nevada, might have been falsified. Who would do that? That's illogical to do that. To falsify data saying that a nuclear waste dump is safe? Why would anybody? In Washington, Nevada senators, both of their senators, asked the U.S. Attorney General to protect documents and investigate how U.S. Geological Survey employees falsified data used in the scientific studies on the Yucca Mountain project. They cited Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman. How can I not know the name of the new Energy Secretary? They cited Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman's revelations this week that work on the project might have been falsified. Rodman said his department and the U.S. Geological Survey were investigating. We'll look forward to that investigation. You know that Italy is pulling its troops out of Iraq. No known connection to the fact that the security person protecting the Italian journalist just freed from Iraqi hostagedom a few weeks ago, that security person was killed by American troops. Prime Minister Berlusconi announced, "We will begin to reduce our contingent in Iraq before the end of the year. The reductions will begin in September." Berlusconi did now go back and complain about the accidental killing of the security person protecting journalist Giuliana Segrena. She was in a mosque for 4 hours, giving ample time for anyone to organize a kidnap, and that's what happened. There was a serious mistake, referring to the killing of the security person, and those responsible have to be traced, Berlusconi said. And he concluded, President Bush knows that he cannot delude one of his loyal allies. Really? You sure he knows that? Dateline New York, many media outlets self-censored their reporting on the Iraq invasion because of concerns about public reaction to graphic images and content, according to a survey of more than 200 journalists by American University. The study also determined that vigorous discussions about what and where to publish information and images were conducted at media outlets, and in many cases, journalists posted material online that they would not print. One of the most significant findings was the amount of editing that went into content after it was gathered but before it was published. On 15% of the occasion, news organizations edited material for publication, according to people who covered the war in Iraq, and they did not believe the final version accurately represented the story. Some 42% of those polled said they were discouraged from showing photographic images of dead Americans. 17% they were prohibited. Journalists were also discouraged from showing pictures of hostages. Only 3% reported being prohibited from showing them. Some 36% of respondents reported being in Iraq or in surrounding country during the war and its aftermath. About half the group said they were embedded. The survey also included comments from respondents offering specific incidents of censorship or lengthy discussions about coverage. Mainly censored about death. Death. Why would you want to know about death when there's a war going on? Hey, we're eating here. The deputy as if the incident involving the Italians was not enough, comes this. The deputy commander of the Iraqi army in a western province, Al-Anbar, was shot dead by U.S. troops at a checkpoint this week. The U.S. forces opened fire on Brigadier General Ismail Swayed al-Obeid, who had left his base in Baghdadi to head home. They spotted him on the road after the curfew. No immediate reaction was available from the U.S. military. U.S. forces have struggled to build up Iraqi security forces in that province. This won't help. That's my prediction. And finally, at the top of the week's news, the United States is exerting maximum pressure on, here's that country again, Pakistan, to provide detailed and authentic information of all its nuclear cooperation with Iran over the years. Contacts in the highest echelon of Pakistan's strategic quarters told the Asia Times that Condoleezza Rice gave strong demands to Pakistan. Last week, Pakistan publicly admitted that Dr. A.Q. Khan, the mastermind of his country's nuclear program, had given centrifuges rather than just blueprints to Iran as part of a package of materials that could be used to make a nuclear bomb, but only in his personal capacity. Centrifuges are used to enrich uranium. The U.S. now wants hard evidence of this and all of Pakistan's other dealings so it can build the case against Iran. This will include full scrutiny of Pakistan's nuclear program from the late 80s until the early 90s. Importantly, and to the consternation of Pakistan, the U.S. demand includes direct access and interrogation of the former chief of army staff in Pakistan, General Aslam Beg, who has on many occasions openly endorsed nuclear cooperation with Iran. The demand has sent shockwaves through the army headquarters in Pakistan. To the date, the belief had been that Pakistan's cooperation had been sufficient to avoid people like Dr. Khan from being handed over. The question that had been raised in some cases, even on this broadcast, why are we questioning him? We'll find out, maybe. Or maybe, like Mark McGuire, Dr. Khan will say, I'm not here to talk about the past. Down and down she goes. Amanda Jones. On and on she goes.
Don't you realize the money invested in you? Hey girl, you just got to find someone who really put your family through. Hey. Odds and odds you go. I'm a man with Jones. I've been up and up and up and up. She looks quite delightful this song. She's the darling of a discotheque crowd.
This is Le Show from Austin, Texas. Think of it. Well, I can stop thinking about it. I'll do the thinking about that for you. Ladies and gentlemen, there are two appointments announced in recent days by the Bush administration that have raised eyebrows among critics of the administration. Well, if critics' eyebrows can't be raised, then why are they critics in the first place? They've had too much Botox, obviously. Too much political Botox. Anyway, the nominations in question, the putative appointments in question, thank you very much, are John Bolton to be ambassador to the United Nations, replacing John Danforth, who I believe retired to spend more time with someone's family. He was going to figure out whose after he has the time to think about it. And this week, Paul Wolfowitz named to be the new head of the World Bank. Bolton raised some eyebrows because he had said on at least one occasion, the United Nations doesn't exist, meaning that it doesn't exist. Now comes news, U.S. Nominee for the World Bank, Paul Wolfowitz, has been summoned to Brussels to explain to an angry Europe how he would run the World Bank in an escalation of the international row over his nomination. Yes, old Europe's not happy. European countries are furious at Bush naming an enemy of multilateralism and by the unilateral way it was done, and are considering whether to block it. The summons, officially described as an invitation, was issued by Louis Michel, the development commissioner for the European Union. His demand was welcomed by many EU governments. Wolfowitz has yet to respond, although he has stressed his willingness to listen to his critics. The U.S. Traditionally names the head of the World Bank. The rest of the world, or Europe, traditionally names the head of the International Monetary Fund. U.S. blocked the European nomination for the IMF a few years ago, so it's a precedent. Doesn't mean it'll happen, but Europe's making noises about maybe blocking the Wolfowitz appointment. Europe has 30 votes on the board, 16 for the United States, raising questions about whether the Bush administration can count votes. Anger is rising at the nomination itself and at the way the administration announced it after initial soundings had met with widespread opposition around the world. One senior British figure privately described it as an abuse of power by Bush. And, meantime, there's an outcry among the bank's staff, the World Bank staff. The staff association has met the bank's executives to voice its concerns after it was swamped with complaints from employees over the Wolfowitz nomination. One bank employee said, when you work for the bank, you have to be a compromise seeker. Everyone sees him as a divisive figure. Who knows? It might even be cause for a phone call.
Nesting eagle, finally unfrozen down at the ranch. Getting there, 41. Some mighty pretty brush we're clearing this weekend. Mighty pretty. So, how does Mr. My Son Spoiled My Whole International Order like the looks of a democratic Middle East? Well, don't think you should be taking too many bows right away unless you orchestrated the deaths of Arafat and the Lebanese president. I mean, those really were the
you
triggering...
You really can't do it, can you? Can't acknowledge that the wrong son, the short son, the drunk son, was right after all.
It isn't about that.
You don't see the governor of Florida ushering in a new democratic Middle East now, do you?
Yeah, this is never a rivalry between you and Jeb. We loved you both in your own special ways.
Oh, bull duty. This was a rivalry since Jeb had got his two-wheeler.
Well, getting back to the present-day frame of references... I think the Middle East is a very treacherous part of the world, you know. Don't want to count our chickens before the eggs have even been laid.
You mean you don't want to kill the chickens that lay the eggs?
That's the goose.
Excuse me?
It's the goose you don't want to kill. Chickens you just don't want to count.
Well, sir, you know, don't get me wrong here. You know, I hate math as much as the next person, but if you don't count them... How you ever going to know how many... Wait a minute. Why the heck fire are we talking about chickens?
Look here, Sprout. Didn't say word one when you appointed John Bolton to the UN post, true?
Yeah, I suppose so.
The UN ambassadorship, the very job in which a certain president's father once served with a... certain amount of distinction, and now it's being turned over to a certified bomb thrower like Bolton.
John Bolton is not a bomb thrower.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He has a grenade on his desk in the State Department that says World's Greatest Reaganite.
That is true,
well,
and we've done extensory research and vetting and intervetting, and there is just no evidence that he's ever thrown the thing. So, you know, the worst thing that you could say about the man is that he's a bomb owner.
He's against the whole idea of the UN. He once said it didn't exist.
Hey, look, 41, everybody knows the UN is in need of serious reform. Sometimes the best guy to push for reform...
is a guy who believes we shouldn't even pay our dues. I'd be surprised if he advocates privatizing the UN.
We don't call it that.
All right. Anyway, as stipulated, didn't say word one about Mr. Bolton, but sending Wolfowitz to run the World Bank.
Hey, this is exactly why I don't read the papers, sir, because you cannot believe what I don't read in them about Paul Wolfowitz. He's a good man. He's got a good heart.
You said that about Vladimir Putin.
Vladimir is a good man. I'm not so sure anymore about his heart. But
Sprout, never wanted to shout from the rooftops to you about this, but the post-war international community we helped to build was our idea. It was to serve our interests. Mm-hmm. The Cold War was challenging, what with the Soviet veto and all, but it's been good for us. Spelled U.S. Kind of silly to tear it down now.
Hey, 41, two things. I do know how to spell U.S. And
well,
it's like the chain gang says.
Who?
The chain gang, Dick Cheney. If ExxonMobil wants to take on some new challenge in some other part of the world, you know, they just up and do it. They don't run to the United Oil Companies first to ask if it's okay.
Just seems a little self-defeating is all.
Sir, I understand a father's pride. I've seen it secondhand.
Well,
I'm sure that down the line, a few years, if Jenna or Barbara achieve high office, and they take a policy position that, while extremely successful, you know, takes a whack or two out of something I helped to slap together, I'm sure I'll be a little bit bent out of shape, too. But see, that's the price you pay when your ancestors go into the family business. Hey, look, some new brushes come up for clearing. I got to scoot.
Okay.
Love to Mom, okay?
Okay.
There was a holy book from ancient time, a parable for peace in humankind, wars were fought in its name, and we soon forgot. We lost the plot, and still we never learn. These are the bridges that we burn. There was an ocean deep, harvest wide, from which we took and never would deny. Silent and empty now, we look for blame, yeah, do the same to those who'll never. These are the bridges that we burn, bridges that we burn. And they're gone, they're gone. Those precious gifts that we, the knowing, have been throwing. Design that had given us hope for all of time. It was a gift of life, answers that men might learn, and of course we sold it.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Tales of Airport Security. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Dear Harry, I was going through security at Newark Airport on the way to LAX, and the woman running the carry-on conveyor belt said that removing your shoes was recommended. Sensing a new wrinkle in the security protocol, I asked her if that meant I could keep my shoes on. She said, yes, I could go through the metal detector and see if I got through. But if I set it off, I would have to be searched. Well, that sounded like a minor risk since my shoes don't have any metal in them. I went on through, and sure enough, I didn't set off the alarm. Free to go? Not so fast. A big burly agent stopped me and told me to have a seat in the search area and to remove my shoes. He ran the metal detector over me a couple of times and gave me an upper body pat-down, none of which turned up anything. Before letting me go, he explained that I was searched because I fit a shoe profile. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. How's your shoe profile, by the way? Very attractive, I'm sure. Ladies and gentlemen, last week on this broadcast, we presented some segments looking back over the broadcast career of former CBS Evening News anchor Dan Rather. Time did not allow us to present all of the highlights in the show archives. So this week, a final one, because enough is enough. This is Dan Rather in Seattle trying to decide whether or not to wear the trench coat.
Here's what we're going to do. The question is whether we can do it without the coat. Hi, folks. How
are
you doing?
Let's
Hi.
Take a look and find out.
Jeff would prefer to do it without the coat. But on the other hand, I would prefer not to be the frozen anchorman.
Yeah. I sent for some decaf coffee for you, too. Warm you up a little bit.
Great. Matter of fact, AJ was going to bring some.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Let me frame it up.
We don't
look.
Have much. Yeah.
I mean, see how everybody thinks about it.
I think it's your comfort level, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be cold, but...
That's good. You know what? The green is good.
Is it?
Not the light.
Green is
yeah.
good.
It's
okay.
Good. You don't need a scarf.
Don't need a scarf.
Uh-huh.
Don't think so?
Oh, yeah.
Now, let's try it without it.
Green is good because it's sun.
Well, you can thank Gene for that because she said take your green coat. You know me. I'd take almost anything.
With this.
But you know what? If we wear the coat between now and then, I think that we're going to be all right.
All right, good. Good, because that looks very nice.
Now, does that look good?
It looks just a little hot on this side, Tom, but...
Where are we here? Which camera are we on? One? Here we go.
Yeah, right straight ahead.
You know what?
Dan,
I think it's
Dan, when we're doing this, at Space Needle...
Right.
Which is right now coming out of the top of your head.
Right. Well, that's
yeah,
it.
There you go.
Over the
right
shoulder.
Applied
camera right.
Yes, yeah.
I see what you mean. There we go.
Nice, Tom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right,
I see. You want the space needle.
Yeah.
Far enough?
You need to drop your mic.
Okay.
It's probably a little more, Dan.
Yeah. Probably a little more to left.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. I think, Jeff, what we try to do. Now let's see the coat, please. Thank you. Because it's going to get nothing but windy and cold.
Yes, sir.
If you could move just one hair to your left. That's all right. Now we're just trying something here.
I think that would help.
Okay.
That's what we do.
That's what we'll do. We'll go on and take it off.
I think so. Don't you think?
For the 550, you're fine.
Yeah.
Or for the 550.
We take it off. I think we need to be consistent.
Okay.
But here's the thing.
The broadcast is not for another 45 minutes.
Right. So, correct.
Temperature. Wind will be up and the temperature will be down.
Yes.
What do you think? But it looks so windblown this way. I mean, I think the coat looks fine. I agree with you, the coat's subtle. But what do you think?
No, that's not. I think we see how we feel when it come out.
Okay.
And you can just go with it. It's not going to affect the light because they're both dark.
Okay.
So we'll see how we feel at 6:20.
Okay. Now, here's the question. Are we going to be able to build in? Of course, the wind's coming right off the water right now, isn't it? I was thinking about trying to build some kind of windbreak. Does this thing pull over?
It's so noisy.
But it's noisy. It's going to call out. Yep. That's about as low as you're going to shoot it, is it?
Pretty low.
I can, right about there is what it usually asked for, and a little bit of a push.
Yeah, with a little more headroom. I don't know, Jeff.
If you do, if you wear the collar, take the collar down.
Definitely not.
You want the collar up?
Absolutely. Nobody wears trench coat with the collar down.
I think it's distracting. I really do.
Well, my concern about the whole coat would be distracting. See, if you put it down,
you don't see as much. I mean, it looks nice.
I think so.
It doesn't look like geeky. It doesn't look like geeky.
I think we ought to try to do it without it.
Okay.
That's what I honestly think. Whether we can do that or not, I don't know.
I think you can.
What we don't want to do is look cold.
Who's got a belt of whiskey? We got to get a belt of whiskey in just before we start. Anybody bring the whiskey?
How long before we do this 550?
Another 10 minutes. So you can step down. He's going to adjust the light.
Yeah.
No, 7 minutes.
You know, Jeff, one of the things we want to do here...
We want to
be really alert between 6:30 and 7:15. Any changes in the Iraq story, because it's the time of day. If it's going to change, it might change.
Okay, we certainly will. Be.
And the other thing is, who's watching the Japanese markets?
Actually, that's a good question.
Because they may change as well. We need to have somebody watching.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's clear to me we should have taped this broadcast at noon when the weather was better.
Exactly.
Back to the right. Let me do this thing for combat points of the Gulf just in case. Dad and the doctors say the seven McCoys are doing remarkably well. Uncle Premature has had couplets in intensive care. On the El Nino watch tonight, the future of a weather forecast is about to be launched. A high-tech satellite you can see inside the storm, inside the clouds.
You want to go to your
and I on America, telephone scammers who soak the elderly for billions of dollars.
It's 4 minutes away. It's up.
Put that back light back on.
It's on. We just turned it back on.
Tonight from Seattle. Is that where you want it? You want that needle that far over? Tonight from Seattle, here's what we're working on, the latest on the Iraq crisis and those Iowa septuplets. Also, El Nino watchers will be getting a new high-tech satellite from Japan. We'll show you how it will help satellites. Scientists give us better earlier warnings about winter storms headed our way. How much time are these promos, folks?
2 minutes.
2 minutes, okay.
2.5 minutes.
Should we say from Seattle? It's going to look weird if we don't. From Seattle, here's what we're working on, the latest on the Iraq crisis and those Iowa septuplets. And El Nino watchers will be getting a new high-tech satellite from Japan. We'll show you how it will help scientists give us all better, earlier warnings about El Nino and winter storms. That's great. It's working fine, Eric. How are you doing?
How about that?
That's a little better. Leave it at that.
Thank you. I'll be
Eric, what do you think now?
Eric, a lifetime of not... But Jeff is insistent that we keep our collar down, but I never worn a coat. Can't imagine.
Tell them how it looks, Eric. Can you hear them okay, Ben?
I did before, but I don't think he's saying anything right now. Ask him to give us something.
1 minute. 1 minute.
Okay, folks, we're 1 minute to doing this, little dude.
Okay, quiet, everybody. Here we go.
Tonight from Seattle, here's what we're working on, the latest on the Iraq crisis and those Iowa septuplets. Also, El Nino watchers will be getting a new high-tech satellite from Japan.
It will help scientists give us all better earlier warnings about El Nino and other winter storms headed our way.
Quiet, please. 10 seconds.
Tonight from Seattle, here's what we're working on, the latest on the Iraq situation, and a sneak preview for you of the newest weapon El Nino watchers are getting to give us better warnings. Okay, not our best take, but let's live with it.
Okay.
Because we need to move on. Now, we need to make a decision.
I think we should stay.
Code or no code?
I think you should go with the code.
When he leans in, it takes care of that.
I think you should go with the code.
Do you?
Yeah. Keep it down. I like it with the collar down.
He leans in.
Code with the collar down.
Takes care of it almost perfectly.
Okay. We have a decision here.
It looks terrific.
Yeah,
we have a decision. It looks good. I'm glad you talked to me.
Take some of
this.
When he stands up straight, it's a little hot. And when he leans in, it's just fine. So if you kick it down, it's a bit of a deal.
Well, I can, you know, I can lean back, lean forward, lean sideways, or
whichever way you want him to go. You want him to move in more?
Well,
no,
sorry.
I can fix the light. No, we're gonna fix it.
Is this Soak the Elderly thing? Is there something new in it? There's been a lot of that on. It bothers me a little bit.
Awfully good. You know what's special about it? They got such a compelling guy who got burned, and he describes it, and they have tapes because they.
Yeah.
He told, and so they tape recorded the exchange.
Okay. Okay, can we do a headline?
I've also got a skin detailer on him.
Sorry?
Hope it's not too far.
Thank you. We're a little worried about the coat. We decided to go with it. It's cold. There's no getting around it. Good. Thank you.
Ready for headlines?
And Jeff likes the collar down.
Yes, we're ready. I'm sorry.
I like to collar up, but what can I tell you?
Eric's a little concerned about the lapels waving in the wind.
Okay, we'll tape them down.
I got some tape.
Tape them down.
We can gaff them down.
Now for another copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
Yeah, we can gaff them down. That coat, that darn coat. Ladies and gentlemen, Washington State House Minority Leader Bruce Chandler apologized Friday for remarks other Republicans made earlier in the week comparing embryonic stem cell research to, say it with me now, the Holocaust. The references made to the Holocaust were regarded by some, understandably, as insensitive and inappropriate, he said. Dateline, Lakewood, Colorado, a piece of art with an anti-war message is back on full display after the removal of part of it from a public exhibit bought the threat of a lawsuit. City manager Mike Rock of Lakewood, Colorado, had ordered one of a number of ceramic stones removed in mid-February after city council members complained it was unpatriotic. On Wednesday, he apologized to the artist for removing it from the display at the Lakewood Cultural Center. Who knew? Dateline Washington, former Congressman Gary Condit this week quietly settled his $11 million defamation lawsuit against author Dominic Dunn, just as the lawsuit was entering a potentially embarrassing phase. With the settlement, Condit secured an apology, the payment of an undisclosed sum, and the freedom from further intimate questions about his friendship with... Remember her name? Yes, Chandra Levy. I did not say or intend to imply that Mr. Condit was complicit in her disappearance, and to the extent my comments may have been misinterpreted, I apologize for them, Dunn said in a brief prepared statement. Condit declared he accepted Dunn's apology. Dateline Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia is willing to accept the Indonesian government's apology for the burning of the Malaysian flag by Indonesia's citizens. For Mr. Albar said that the apology was made publicly by the Indonesian ambassador in Kuala Lumpur and that it was good for Malaysia and Indonesian ties. They apologized we should not be arrogant and reject it because it came from its ambassador. I believe he had his government's mandate to apologize, said the Malaysian official. That's very gracious, don't you think? And finally, in a limited apology pool this week, fast food giant KFC has withdrawn two menu items from its outlets in China because of fears of contamination from a food coloring, Sudan 1, which could cause cancer. The firm stopped selling New Orleans roast chicken wings and chicken hamburgers. Yeah, that's the kind of food we eat in New Orleans, ladies and gentlemen. in all its outlets in China when Sudan 1 was detected in a sauce. The company says it will destroy all the remaining unsafe sauce. According to a statement issued by KFC's parent company, Yum Brands. Yum apologized to all its customers and announced that no other food from KFC or Pizza Hut, also a Yum subsidiary, contains the coloring. Apologies of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the East Coast through the facilities of the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, channel 108 on Sirius Satellite Radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. And available around the world, whenever you wanted, at two different locations, live and archived, on your computer, KCRW.com and HarryShear.com. And it would be just like stuff that Yum Brand sells, not potentially causing cancer, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. A spokesman for Yum Brands did not say we're not here to talk about the past, however, so you got to give him credit for that. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshear.com. Show chapeau to Phil here at Sound Labs in Austin, Texas, for help with today's broadcast. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.